Welcome to Orbitals, an astrology podcast. I'm your host, William Holloway, and today's show is a very special one. Astrologer Travis Black is my guest, and we are going to be discussing the metaphysics and astrology of Twin Peaks. Travis, welcome.
Hi, William. Nice to be here.
Thanks for being here. I'm super excited to be having this conversation. I wanted to have you on as I am someone who considers David Lynch and Twin Peaks part of my origin story, as I think a lot of people who grew up interested in esoteric things. But you have a much more direct line to the show and to the whole Twin Peaks universe. So I'd love to hear about where it all started with you.
Twin Peaks, for many, is something they chose or found or discovered. It landed on me. I didn't have a choice with Twin Peaks. It really came to, you know, near where I lived when I was growing up. And we were going to the diner one morning and they were closed because they were filming. So we were there the very first day of filming and they were filming at the diner, the pilot episode. I remember we got there and there was a camera in the middle of the street and they're trying to get a shot of the street light that you see a lot in a pilot where it's like green, yellow, red. That's stoplight was right in front of the diner. And that was the very first shot Twin Peaks ever filmed.
Amazing.
And I was right there when they were rolling that. And then...
how old were you again? Sorry, not to interrupt, but how old were you at that time?
9.
Okay.
Just a kid. And yeah. I think I was able to go and hang out on the set and run around and ask questions because I was a kid. Had I been some 15-year-old or adult, you know, I don't think that would have been as cute, right?
Right.
But I was this kid running around asking questions and I was really interested in what they were doing and why. And you know, I didn't know who Lynch was or even what movies were. I didn't ever thought about it. Right. And I was the cameras, it was all very intoxicating, this stuff and how it looked and what was going on and kind of glamorous and everything, even though still very much a low budget production. But yeah, Peggy Lipton took me under her wing and kind of kept me from running around everywhere. She played Norma and she was kind of like just holding on to me. I remember her hands on my shoulders, just like turning me around and telling me where to go. And we stayed in touch. We formed a little friendship then. And I kept in touch with a lot of people over the years. And some of them helped me get my first jobs working in film in LA. Many years later, I kept in touch with several people, some of the actors, some of the crew. And then ultimately, you know, I got to watch them film every iteration of Twin Peaks and the new season as well. And I got to see Peggy again at the diner and it was very bizarre watching them film the new season because it's like watching Twin Peaks theater. Like you're watching the actual characters and it's very, at that point it was very different in 2015 watching them. Like you knew who everybody was and what was going on and all these, but then we were like the fans on the sidewalk were all like, oh my God, what's going on? What plot point is, you know, is this going to be? And oh, they covered up the windows. I wonder if Philip Jeffries is going to be in the diner. Like we're coming up with these crazy theories.
Wow. But,
so it was one of, you know, my story of Twin Peaks is one of, you know, kind of being trapped in the fourth wall of it being that, I was always in between. I saw the reality of it. I knew the place in real life. I saw the fictional world. I had one foot in both by accident. And then it's also one of, you know, fandom where something comes along and really speaks to you and leads you to lots of things. And, you know, I think I followed where it went, but, you know, I think fandom is a bit of a creative distortion we have.
Yeah.
In that we are fans of the things perhaps we want to make. And that's maybe an easy grab. But if we use that example here, you know, I felt that. Like I felt like Twin Peaks in many ways was my story thematically. There's lots of overlap. And he came along and, you know, kind of took my texture and my world and my place and made it his own. And in a way, Twin Peaks kind of robbed me of my own cinematic language that I was never able to achieve as a filmmaker myself because I was always under the thumb of Twin Peaks and I, you know, became a filmmaker. And so now Twin Peaks is kind of something I try to avoid.
Really? Elaborate on that, that you try to avoid.
I want my own thoughts, my own ideas, my own ruminations. I want, whether it's Twin Peaks or spirituality or astrology, I want to decide what things mean. I want to decide what things are. And when I'm in the world of Twin Peaks, I'm always going to be creating from someone else's idea. And I'm, you know, earlier in my filmmaking, I saw that like the influence is creeping in. And I actually got a pack of Brian Eno Oblique Strategies cards, which are kind of like tarot cards for creative blocks, let's say. And really helped me kind of grow my own voice in screenwriting that was really, really beneficial. But yeah, I don't, if David Lynch is kind of dad, you know, I just kind of want to like, I don't want to do what you're doing, dad. I want to do my own thing. And it
I
took me
totally get
a
that.
long
Yeah.
time.
I mean, I went to school for video production, and well, I definitely was like, well, I'm not going to make a movie because it'll just be a ripoff of some kind of David Lynch thing. So then I was like, well, let me do music videos. Like, there's any kind of, revenue in being a music video director. And like, even this was only 10 years ago, but like, even then, like, I don't know what I was thinking. But, all of those, I watch them now and I'm like, it's all influenced by all of that stuff.
His work is very sticky. Like it
Yeah.
gets onto people and just kind of goes with you. And it has like, it's like the shadows are kind of sticky. And that once you tap into that vein, it's hard to close it back up.
Yes. And I think that, and we were saying this off camera a little bit ago, when he passed away recently and someone reached out and asked me if I was going to write tribute, and I thought about it and thought about it, and then just seeing all these people with their fan art, like and writing their tributes, and it's nice and all, but the more I thought about it, I was like, to really honor someone like David Lynch, and he would say it in interviews too, like, just make the damn thing, like, do the whatever the creative thing is, just do it. The real tribute would be, I'd been thinking about doing a podcast for a decade, pretty much. After he died, that I was like, I just need to do the damn thing and just get the podcast out there and work on this thing that I want to work on. And that'll be the best tribute.
Beautiful. That's what it should be. Like, what can I create that's my thing? That's
Yeah.
what David Lynch, I think, really was trying to get everyone to do. Like, you meditate and you get your own ideas, you know?
Yeah.
And I think he really was frustrated by a lot of the stasis and stagnancy of the fandom, that it didn't, they didn't kind of go off and do their thing. I don't know. I wonder. Some things I just kind of heard over the years that he was just kind of really wanted everyone to kind of be an artist, and everyone around him, he wanted to inspire everyone to be an artist. And I
Right.
think people who got stuck making his art, you know, missed the memo.
Yeah.
Yeah, try harder, do better. Like the Lynch and the characters, like Audrey, for example. Audrey was a collaboration of Sherilyn Fenn, David Lynch. Like so many people came together and contributed what became Audrey. And you're selling some like Audrey sticker. Like it's robbing from so many people on the show. They didn't get paid any money to do anything. They're all
Right.
living in a fucking some shitty apartment in like far out in Burbank somewhere, you know, getting tiny residual checks. But no, they didn't make any money off this. So I have a lot of, it's a labor issue. I think it's a creativity issue. I think it's an authorship and authenticity issue. But I think making fan art is can be authentic as well, but it's like that's your idea, the red drapes and the diary, that the zigzag floor, like that's your art. Like go back and come out, don't come out until you got something else.
Yeah.
So I think I have a lot of kind of curiosity around these people and what they're doing and why, but I think it is problematic on, you know, several fronts.
Yeah, do something original. Like take a cue, from David Lynch.
Yeah, and that's hard. I understand that. We don't live in a world that really wants that. He's one of the last vestiges of this, and we should do everything we can to do exactly what he says because
Exactly.
he had some really great advice, and he said a lot of really, you know, when he spoke, he really meant what he said. And there's a lot there for people who want to make art and use, you know, even if they just want to sit there and make drawings and be in a flow state and like, you know, get the colors and, you know, draw your Audrey pictures. That's, you know, I get it. But there are other ways to do that, and I wonder what that work would look like if people could branch out. I'll have to find you the picture of this like Twin Peaks back tattoo I saw.
Oh man.
Though the best fan art, I for the record, for those who are listening, want to look it up, there's all these Ghanaian like
I know
Twin Peaks
exactly what you're
posters. These
talking about.
there's
Yeah.
like th about three or four or five posters of African artwork of Twin Peaks from the 90s. And what's great about it is you can tell they never even watched
Right.
it.
There's like an animal or something in there, right? Like I'm trying to remember what I've seen it. I know
There's
you're.
like a cobra shooting lasers out of its eyes. Like it's a mess. Like there's no reason for any of it. But it's actually a little bit psychic for season three, if you look at it and
That's
try and interpret
true.
some of these. But the best Twin Peaks fan art is by people who have never seen the show.
That's so funny. Yeah, and I feel like in that poster, everyone had a gun. Like
Looked like a
even
giant,
Laura
like,
Palmer had a
yeah,
gun.
like a Tarantino shootout.
Yeah. They were probably just like, oh, it's American, so let's put a bunch of guns in it.
Totally.
I was curious just because I heard you talk about this somewhere else, and I just thought it was a really sweet story about how you, when you were younger and you won a car, a famous car. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes. So it was Twin Peaks Fest 92, and this was an event organized by New Line Cinema to be the premiere of Twin Peaks, the movie, which they could not drum up any interest anywhere else because it was getting a bad reputation. It did not get booed at Cannes, like people say. It's kind of an urban myth. The footage shows a standing ovation, and everyone's pretty happy with it. There's actual footage of it. But it got a reputation for being kind of like, as Tarantino said, I think, speaking of, he said this is Lynch with his head so far up his ass. Like,
Yes.
and it didn't get a it was not the time or place. It was a complete departure from the series, in tone and otherwise, and look and feel. People really, revolted against it. So it had a hard time finding screens to be on. And they decided on, well, fuck it. We can't have a big premiere here. We're going to like put together the fans like it. So we'll have a little fan festival around the premiere. And I found out about it on the news, I think, the local news. We bought a ticket to the festival or whatever, and there's a raffle for like win Agent Cooper's car. And so I entered the raffle. I think me and my friend, my dad, all bought a ticket, and I won the raffle of Agent Cooper's car. It's the car where you see him coming in the pilot episode, and he's driving past the sign. He's talking, and Diane, it's 11:24, entering Twin Peaks. That was my first car. I won it, but because I was like 14 and I wasn't of legal driving age, they made me give it back, and it had to go to the runner up, who was of legal driving age. And I, forever, if I find that woman who denied me Agent Cooper's car, I mean, I was a child. I was heartbroken, but it was a premiere. So I got other things, like, I got to meet fake Donna Moira Kelly. I got to meet Shirley. I got to meet everybody. So that was really cool. I didn't get to have the car, but I got to, for the first time in my life, like, see someone I recognized as a celebrity. And we sat right in front of all the cast. We sat in the row right in front of them, and I was just like mortified the whole time. Like, Laura Palmer watching me watch her was very like. But there's Twin Peaks has moments like this where I get into these weird, warped kind of things like that, that to a young mind, psychologically, is very confusing and
And heavy. That was heavy subject matter, and especially for just coming out and her being around that age, and it's time hadn't passed yet. The perspective wasn't.
was wild.
Yeah. The world of Twin Peaks is really steeped in mysticism and dream logic. What is your knowledge of the background of how that was integrated into the show?
Yes, so I mean, Lynch himself, I mean, is Hindu. He's all up in Vedic astrology. You can look at Twin Peaks, the new season, entirely through a Vedic astrology lens, and like come out with something pretty interesting. So you have that, and I think he has his own kind of his own kind of spirituality around that. Dare I say that Twin Peaks is also maybe even a cry for help from, I'm in a cult, help.
Interesting.
That's something I thought of, that it's his coded way of seeking help from the organization that kind of runs the meditation he was a part of. And they have, nefarious doings. And I do this, I do that med pract that meditation practice. But it's just a mantra meditation now. I modified it to be not them, but I'm drifting.
That's okay.
So transcendental meditation plays a huge part in this. And that process, you look at the red room, those chairs, that's a transcendental meditation center like arrangement when you go to get your mantra and your initiation. That's what the chairs are. Beyond that, what Lynch has for spirituality, we really don't know.
Right.
What I've described there is as much as I've been able to extract over these decades.
Okay.
Mark Frost comes with a theosophical kind of Aleister Crowley, Ancient Aliens vibe.
Yes.
So he has kind of more of the conspiracy thing, but like, you know, why people believe conspiracy is not necessarily like the conspiracy itself. So that's kind of Mark Frost's angle, and he's interested in kind of the basic 20th century lodge occultism, things like Golden Dawn, Thelema, etc.
Yeah.
So he's interested in those as an intellectual pursuit, like occultism as like something you read about. He's not a practitioner, as far
Right.
as I know. He's into
Yeah, I don't
baseball.
believe he is.
He's like
Right.
baseball guy.
Right. Yeah.
So he's the TV writer, and Lynch is the cinema like bouillon cube. So between the two of them, that's the creative thing. But you know, we're not here to talk about their creative stuff. But then from that, they're kind of like boomers who had kind of the 60s transcendental, transpersonal rather, kind of experiences and lifestyle and philosophies and groups and cults and meetings and agapes and lodges and all these things in LA were everywhere. The
Yeah.
stuff you can reach up in the air in LA and grab this shit, especially then. So I think there's just a mishmash of like melting pot 20th century American kind of new age generalness in there. And at the time, you know, astrology was really big when it came out. We just wrapped up the 80s where astrology was kind of like a given that just the president and his Reagan and
Right.
Nancy Reagan were using it. It was just like a thing. It was real. It was in the air. And in Seattle, you know, where I'm from, there was like four there were four astrology bookstores at one point. The writers that ended up kind of taking the reins of the show after everyone kind of set it up creatively and kind of felt like it was running on its own and could do well. The writers were kind of grasping at anything they could find for to mine milk for occult stuff. I think it was Robert Engels talks about how, or Harley Peyton talks about one of the two. They had this an encyclopedia of demonology, and I've been trying to find which one it is, and I have some ideas, but that's where they got the how they started kind of tying things up towards the end of the second season, towards the Black Lodge like finale. They had to create Bob as a demon at some point, and that was birthed from a lot of these theosophical, just random occult books that you could just get at the library or had around or could find at the bookshelf. Like, I don't think they were like knew what to look for, and I don't think a lot of them had any direct practitioner experiences.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting how they, in this mess, were able to kind of cultivate a very clear pantheon buffet of occult philosophies and modalities.
Right. For anyone listening who doesn't know, I interviewed Bill Herbst last year. It's on my Substack. But I interviewed Bill Herbst, who has been an astrologer for many years, and he was Mark Frost's personal astrologer throughout the 80s and up until the beginning of Twin Peaks. But they were attached at the hip for almost a decade. They did a lot of things together. And, Bill told me that so much of the mysticism in the show came out of just, late night conversations that they were having about the things that they were interested in.
Yeah, it sounds like there's just two new age guys in LA
Yeah.
doing divination.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and I know I think it's also yes, and there is ostensibly some Tibetan Buddhism in there, but every time they go towards like Native American philosophy or you know, or other things, it tends to be something else. They start are actually quoting or kind of doing is they're giving theosophy, the great doctrine. So when you hear Native American philosophy in Twin Peaks, when you get into any kind of philosophical thing that, says to be something else, it's probably from, theosophy.
Interesting.
And it's worth noting that planetary magic plays the plot point for the second season in terms of when opening a portal, right? When there's a Jupiter Saturn conjunction,
Right.
they are clearly reading some planetary magic stuff. And there's a book, Dennings and Phillips, I think, was out at that time and was brand new. And that's the book that eventually, when Twin Peaks aired, and I was going into these occult bookshops in Seattle, and I was like, I want a book about how planets open doorways, open portals. Maggie Nalbandian handed me Planetary Magic by Dennings and Phillips, and I still have it. It's,
Wow.
but you can see that they maybe, pulled things from that.
Well, one of the more interesting things that came out of the Bill Herbst Mark Frost partnership was as Mark and David Lynch were writing Twin Peaks, Mark was commissioning Bill to create astrological charts for all these characters that they were writing. And he sent me the Excel file with all the info on it. Well, let's look at it. And I'll provide a link to the Substack article, my interview with Bill Herbst. It has the chart data in there. I've looked at the chart data that Bill created for the characters, and he's said to me that he's not sure how much that really influenced or not. He's very modest. But when you look at it, I mean, they're pretty spot on for the characters.
Yeah, I think they probably, had some keywords about the chart, who this
Yeah.
person is, personality traits, and I think the writers probably really stuck to those and took those seriously as, in a writing room, you have kind of a Bible of who this person is and what they've
Right.
done, and you have to kind of look at that. You can't just write a character without knowing that, okay, this girl, Donna, her best friend died, like that, you got to kind of know this stuff. So I
Yeah.
think they, and there's so many writers coming in that they probably did organize, or they did probably translate this spreadsheet into some kind of easy keywords for writers to understand and work with. Like character biographies were probably loosely based on this,
Right. I mean, they even
Yeah.
have one for the one-armed man.
Yeah, I think that's interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, there's even a trading card for Bob, and on the back, it's like birth date, like beginning of time, like zodiac
Yeah.
sign, question mark, question mark, question mark, question mark. And I'm like,
Right.
all right, you guys.
Yeah, that's right. That's so funny.
Maddie Ferguson, what's Maddie's rising sign? I want to see what I want to see is right. I want to see these in chart form.
I
We
know. Well,
should
the
generate these.
we should. Well, the problem is that he only did solar charts for all of them, so they don't have rising signs.
Yeah.
Three of them do, though. And I don't know why he didn't remember. He could not remember why only three of them. I mean, one of them makes sense. Obviously, Agent Cooper, which is here
Well,
somewhere.
probably because the only real stuff they have, like it favors sun sign astrology, so they're just making it easy for the writers here.
Right, exactly.
Plus, for a character chart, I think a sun
Yeah.
solar chart works.
Yeah. But yeah, Maddie being a Cancer makes sense. What I
Right.
thought was interesting, though, is that in here, and this is real like nerdy stuff, but it has Laura, they have Laura Palmer as a Scorpio with a Gemini moon.
Too
But
bad.
I,
Sorry, Gemini moons. You're doomed like Laura Palmer.
yeah, double life. But if you look in the Secret Diary of Laura Palmer and you go to the first page, I mean, I know this was written by Jennifer Lynch, but it starts on her birthday, which is listed as July 22nd. So
Yeah, she's a Cancer.
or actually a Leo, right? Isn't that
Or
the
yeah,
beginning of
Leo,
Leo?
sorry.
I know it took me, I was saying Cancer too, and then I had to look it up to make sure. I was like, oh no, that's actually right at the beginning of Leo. But
Yeah,
yeah.
she, I mean, those, the dates in Twin Peaks are an issue. Let's put it that way. And there are discrepancies from the Secret History of Twin Peaks, the book, to the new season that I think are on purpose.
Yes, I've
And
read some Reddit theories about that. What do you think about that?
I don't know, I think it works. I think it's great filmmaking trick because it allows for continuity errors that are inevitable, but it allows the continuity errors to become part of the conspiracy or part of the connectivity of it all.
Right.
Like for example, like it works that Moira Kelly was cast as the new Donna in the movie. Maybe that's a different timeline with maybe she's Will Hayward's actual daughter, and in the series, that's Ben Horn's daughter. Like maybe we're just kind of we slipped into a different layer of Twin Peaks. And I think, Lynch, regarding the dates and everything, I don't think they're important and that they match up. This th these the cards aren't considered canon, but Laura's
Right.
diary is. So those are the hierarchy of things. And I think he says it, he gives clues very sparingly, but when he does, I think we should listen. And there was one time in the Festival Disruption 2016 Festival Disruption, he goes on stage, Lynch, and in front of the theater, and everyone's cheering and everything, and he's like, "Do you want to hear a secret about the new Twin Peaks?" And everyone's erupting because he's filming it at that moment. He's in the middle of filming it, and then someone runs out on stage and whispers in his ear or something. He's like, "Oh, we're out of time. Good
Oh,
night."
I love it.
But that's a clue. We're out of time.
Oh.
He was giving us a secret about the new Twin Peaks. And so, in that way, these dates don't matter because metaphysics and the machinations of things behind the veil seem to fall into place like Plinko on the Price is Right, that kind of game show thing where that thing just kind of goes randomly where it does. It seems like that. How Twin Peaks fills in dates is arbitrary because time in this way, if we it's a philosophical conversation about time at that point, but that we're out of time when like a lot of the fans obsess with like, oh, the Laura's date diary says this and this book says that. It's Twin Peaks is totally erased in my mind because I can't handle the cognitive dissonance. Like there's fans like that. They're like, oh, it's a mistake. Oh, this book was edited so sloppily. All these mistakes. And it's like, well, no, it doesn't matter. They don't matter.
Doesn't
And
matter.
they're interesting how they conflict. Like Audrey's date of returning home is different in one book and the other. Like Laura in one book goes missing, and the other, in reality, she's been murdered. Like these are things that they're planting on purpose and are interesting. So that how the dates match up and don't match up. It's kind of like what I say about numerology. If you want to go crazy really fast, get into numerology
Yeah.
because there's just kind of nothing there.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, I think numerology, it's an easy way to get hung up on things. It may interest us to move on from that to deeper waters.
Okay. I like that.
I would like to look at these charts at some point and
Yeah.
like kind of talk about them and but no, I think perhaps even one thing that's interesting about this is I bet the actors had access to this information because the mess of directors, every episode, a different director. And I bet you the writers or the actors could go to the writer's room and access these things and probably were made for a dual purpose for the writers to use and for the actors. This is actual content that, you produce internally for backstory for productions like this. So I wonder that, but I don't know. I think we should get one of the actors that's in this list on your show and talk to them.
Let's talk to
Oh
Sherilyn Fenn.
my God, I would love to.
I just started following her on Blue Sky. I'm gonna reach out. Why not? And then if she says yes, we are gonna do it.
One thing I think would be interesting to talk about is William Kiesel. He is Ouroboros Press. He's the one who put a copy of the Peekatrix in Austin Coppock's hands. He did a great presentation for 22 Teachings on the occult symbolism of Lynch's work. It's called like the Blue Rose, something, something. It's a lecture he did, and it's really in depth for all the stuff that we're talking about. And he kind of goes into even more excruciating occult detail about things.
Okay.
It may interest you and your listeners to look that up or put that in the show notes.
Okay, absolutely. Thank you. How do you think the legacy of Twin Peaks will transform over time?
I wonder. I mean, to most people now, anything made more than 2 weeks ago is ancient history and should never be watched and is outdated and whatever. I think Twin Peaks will just be a buried treasure that people can dig up and find once in a while. And I don't think cinema in general has a legacy at all. People don't want that,
Yeah.
quite clearly. They don't want that. And so, but there'll be people who come along who want that and they'll find their way to that little thing and that box set or that link or whatever. And then there it'll be, but it'll be a specialty item for
Yeah.
specialty people who have specialty interests, who have found their way to it by accident or came across an image and Google searched it and, retroactively found their way into this. But it's going to be, so Twin Peaks is a thing you have to work hard to discover.
Yeah.
And I'm a little different. Kind of landed on me like
Yeah.
a ton of bricks,
Yeah.
but it discovered me. But Twin Peaks is something you have to go to. you have to engage in. You can't be on your phone when you're watching it. You have to kind of read all the books. You got to look at all the things. There's 50 plus hours of material here in books. And it's fragmented. It's very fragmented. So it's different. It can't age well because it's not set up to, like Mulholland Drive, very enclosed, very spherical, very tight. It's going to age very well. Twin Peaks will be hard because people won't really know what to do with the format of it. And there's been often, even to this day, there's issues of the seasons and movies being separate from each other, and there's no cohesive way to watch it. I think it can fall to the wayside because of its fragmented, fractured format, which just kind of is a great poetic way to imagine Twin Peaks aging. Lynch was making cinema for that cinematic experience. You look up, you look away from Twin Peaks for it, you're going to be lost. Even if you're watching the whole time, you're lost, but you're going to miss an important clue or a throwaway comment, or and those things really add up when you're paying attention in Twin Peaks. They're really cumulative, and that's why the end of the season, the new season, was so thrilling for me, because I was absorbing all of it as we were going, and I was on the edge of my fucking seat in the last like minute.
Me too.
I picked up what they were throwing down. And most people, I'm of a different generation. We are a different generation where we have been trained by other cinema to do that, but people are missing it entirely. They're not, they can't, the attention span prevents them from indulging in Lynch's work.
Yeah. Well, everybody wants an answer. Everyone needs to know why? And like that was what was so perfect about it. So we'll never know. And that's the point. It can be whatever you want it to be, or
But there is a clue in one of the someone
okay.
the, there is a when they're talking about Judy Zhao Day in the FBI office towards the end, somebody ran through Zhao Day through some, I think they mentioned it was a Chinese demon or something in the show, I forget, but they ran it through some ancient Chinese Google Translator or something, and Zhao Day means to explain. And I thought that was, whether it's true or not, I thought it was interesting that the ultimate evil in Twin Peaks, and the ultimate bad, the ultimate thing that's so fucked up about all this is having to explain.
Yeah. I love that. All right. Well, yeah. I would like to hear about what you were working on, a book you're working. I don't, do you want to talk about the book, or are you comfortable with that, or you not want to say it since it's not out there yet?
No, I can talk. I don't know if it's a book yet.
Okay.
I'm not sure what it is, but. Yeah, so I'm a student of clinical psychology, and I'm going to be a therapist someday.
Awesome.
And so, a lot of what I'm interested in is, spiritual abuse, cult dynamics, how people can be taken advantage of and scammed when they're in their most vulnerable state seeking help. That's kind of where I want to insert myself. So a lot of the, what are the things that resist that? And over the years, kind of trying to bring clarity to that blurry line between psychology and spirituality, where people can easily be exploited. I was, trying to find out what so much of this is that. So much of this is that. What is this? Where is this coming from? Is this all from the same place? Is it from different stuff? What is this flavor in everything New Age? Everything occult, everything astrology, everything has this kind of just this weird, funky layer of New Age on it that I can't quite put my finger on. And I've been looking my whole life, like, what is this? Like, I just thought it was this kind of boomer, whatever, which maybe part of it is.
Yeah, there's
And
definitely flavors of that for sure.
think there's a lot of misuse. But most of the things I that irritate me about metaphysics can be traced back to transpersonal psychology. What is the psychology of things, of experiences we really can't describe or aren't here, or aren't quote unquote real? What are these other experiences we have, near-death experiences, peak spiritual states, enlightenment? And they wanted to kind of give an answer to it, like, what, how do we, create a therapeutic container with these things. And so transpersonal psychology is the thing that connects all of these things in the way that they continue to make people who are vulnerable suffer more. Because you can make up whatever you want and say it's transpersonal. It's literally no, it's changing, but there's no empirical data at all. It's all anecdotal. Well, my mom took this herb for her son in the sixth house, and na 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 na. Okay, well, that's nice. Did it work? No. Okay. I was led to this kind of work trying to understand what's wrong with spirituality. Why is this? Why are people looking so scammed? Why are people so scammy? Why is everyone such a fucking asshole in this world now?
Yeah.
You take a, one astrology class and you're fucking offering a, series of workshops on your TikTok, like that kind of shit. I think the occult and astrology is dangerous, and I don't think it should be in anyone's hands. I think we should, my partner likes to say we should take the sages at their word, and like this, we should not have these books being accessible to everybody. And I agree. I think they do a lot more danger than help, and transpersonal psychology kind of just brings in the danger all at once. I was in a cult of transpersonal psychology when I was a child. I was put into a cult where they ostensibly made a spirituality out of transpersonal psychology. And so I have a bit of an inside look at that. And I didn't know what that was at the time. And I didn't really start reading about the cult until a few years ago when Mars was retrograde in Gemini. And I was started to read about my cult for the first time. And I was just kind of horrified. And I was like, but what is this? What are they doing? Where's this coming from? Where is this? What is this philosophy? I couldn't like, because into them, like, they'd say, here's a Hindu practice, but it was a Sufi thing we were doing. Oh, here's a Buddhist thing, but it's actually some Celtic thing. Like, it was just a mess. I had no idea what was what after that. And that's transpersonal stuff for you, is it just confuses all of it. It exploits people, spiritual needs and everyday needs. And it has a way of leading people deeper into psychosis and deeper into suffering and making most of their problems worse, further distorting cognitive things. Cognitive distortions can really fester in transpersonal psych therapies. And I bring all this up because there isn't one part of astrology that transpersonal psychology hasn't touched. To me, anything transpersonal psychology touches is invalidated because it's too exploitable. There's too much bad you can do with it over the good, I think. The therapeutic container is cracked, it's broken. It's like you can kind of pour a little bit out here and there, okay, but it's not something we should invest in. And so, I'm of the opinion that most 20th century, we should really kind of throw out the last 100 years of astrology entirely. Anything that is the post-Jung transpersonal people and on, not Jung's work was taken into transpersonal stuff, but it's not actually his work. It's different. There's kind of a warping of his work.
That
And
makes sense
so,
because everyone loves to quote him, every single astrologer
and
loves it.
these people are transpersonal and they don't even know it,
Right.
what they're subscribing to and where this all comes from. So that's why there's so many grifters, is because we've allowed transpersonal stuff to come in. We've created a giant doorway saying, hey, come on in, everybody. You want to scam everyone and their spiritual suffering? Here it is. And that's, a provocative statement for some people, but I am making a case for, I'm trying to trace the origins of transpersonal psychology, what it has touched and how and what degree and who. And that's what this work is. And I'm having to throw out some astrologies with it. There's going to be some babies thrown out with the bathwater, and that's going to be difficult for some people. But I have a pretty strong case I'm making, so I hope I can get people to kind of reflect on the metaphysics we've adopted in the past 100 years, and reflect upon what things have worked, what things are not worked, which things are we just masking in order to get clients, or all of this, all the problems that we have. But things like evolutionary astrology are not going to make the cut.
That makes sense. My whole thing, maybe it's my Virgo stellium where I need evidence. I can believe in the kookiest stuff as long as you give me like good history, right? So I always was drawn more to like Hellenistic because it seemed like there's an answer for most things, whereas modern and like evolutionary astrology, it feels like it just is because someone said it is. Like, where did this come from? Like, I don't know. That's that.
There's a lot of intuiting, a lot of channels, and
Right.
intuition's where things go wrong and are automatic processing. And I don't trust anyone's intuition because it's an easy place to get colonized, and that can other people's things can come through intuition. So I don't know. I'm more interested in teaching people logic and reason at this point, because that's one way to counter, like culty programming. logic and reason, independent thinking, critical thinking. Giving some people some of those skills really easily can uncover, the victim blaming of parts of evolutionary astrology, transpersonal anything. And so, yes, traditional astrology is great, but it has some other problems too about
Yeah, I'm sure.
the kind of fatalism of it all. And
Yeah.
that's a bad planet, it's a good planet, and all those things. That's a different conversation. But I think there's, in my experience, there's been better, accurate, and useful on the ground help from traditional astrology. And I think that's what's really important with these things. Be kooky, get into this stuff, it's fine, but not as an intervention. When this person's falling apart and they're coming to you for reading and their car's been towed and they can't pay rent and they can't do any of this stuff, it's not a great time for astrology reading. The
Right.
more an intervention is required, it is my opinion that my professional clinical psychology opinion that the closer you are to a problem and the intensity and the trauma of itself, the more you need evidence-based modalities and interventions. The more you get away from that, then you can start bringing in like the meditation and the things and visualization and magic and whatever else after that. But it's not, it doesn't look like it's data says it's not really great to use these things. They're too unstable.
Yeah.
And watching these like idiots at NORWAC trade readings where they're making each other, mental health problems worse. It breaks my heart because I see a lot of people in astrology doing that, where they just are making each other worse through remedies, and no one knows what they're, talking about. Not that I know what I'm talking about with remedies, but I know enough that I see people making each other sick and making each other worse, and that's because of the transpersonal trickle-down stuff that's coming into it. These traditional kids think they're traditional astrologers. I hate to break it to them, but there's a lot of transpersonal stuff in there too that we need to decolonize. But there'll be a lot of pushback on some of those things because they're comfortable and familiar, and maybe they work for some people. I get it,
Yeah.
but that we should all really examine what kind of modalities are of use when. Am I really? Do I have enough training to take on someone's this trauma? How can I get training? Maybe I shouldn't do readings. Like astrologers need to fucking check themselves because
Yes.
I've. Over the years of practicing and teaching now, it hurts to watch people go deeper into their suffering. And plus, I'm a dissenter on medical astrology. I haven't seen that work for me and my clients or my practice. So I kind of include that in some of my critique. It's not quite a transpersonal thing, but I think, getting people to understand is, am I taking this herb or this thing because it's a correspondence? Or am I taking this thing because the phytochemical properties and the active ingredients in this? Nobody even knows that. If you
Yeah.
go to any remedy person, if they can't answer that question, run.
Yeah.
I
I
think
mean,
that's really, really important as we move through things and try other things to know, where these things are drawing their power from.
yeah. Plus, like, I knew somebody who went to school for herbal medicine, and this shit is hard. Like, you don't just learn it from getting a book at the library. Like, it's science. If you're going to be prescribing plant medicine, like you have to know what you're doing. You can't just be like, oh, I'm an astrologer. Oh, this,
Yeah,
whatever.
this is a Mars herb. Like, take this. It's
Yeah.
like, well, actually, you have diabetes. That's gonna inflame your kidney. Like, all these things people don't know because you need to be a chemist to be an herbalist.
Yes. Yeah. It's
Literally.
not, it is complicated stuff. So.
Yeah, that's the problem, is that stuff makes people sick. It makes people psychotic. It makes people, it gives people IBS, whatever it is. Everyone's sick all the time when they're treating each other with these things. Listen to what's going on and start somewhere else. Those things, are nice last resorts. I have a spectrum of things, of modalities I offer for immediate interventions, like trigger point therapy on down, to how am I going to cope this year after the loss of my mother? Like, there are different modalities for different things. And I, as a Mercury and Gemini person, I encourage people to become a generalist. I think Rob Hand says somewhere, people become specialists that you know more and more about less and less, that sooner or later, a whole lot about nothing.
Good
And
point.
I think astrologers need to be, generalists in some degree. And but to note that being a generalist means you're limited in certain ways.
Yes. This is not about telling your future or predicting like specific events are going to happen. We're talking about themes, and keeping it general, I think, is how it should be. I think it's.
That's great. It's like, I think one approach to doing that is getting them to talk.
Yes.
Oh, Mars is the principle of irritation, aggression, war, courage, and it's in your seventh house of relationships. I don't know how might those things be related for you? Like, I get them to like, I'm not going to tell them what it is, but I want them to kind of get the pieces from their life. And that's, according to psychological science, that's the right way to go about it, is we want to get them to talk as much as possible. What do you think, Mars means? What do you think? Here's this, and this. What do you think a couple more keywords might be? It's getting them to participate in the reading as much as possible.
As much as possible, because if they don't, it doesn't, it really is a participation and it's a conversation and they're getting it from themselves. You're just helping them pull it out, right? Like I'm not there to be a fortune teller. I'm just there to like point out some symbolism that helps them put the things together, you know?
And that's where real change comes from, and real realizations. Us tell, and otherwise, we're entertaining them.
Yeah.
But that's a valid form of like, fortune telling is a thing. Sometimes I just go to get like, okay, should I apply to this grad school? And I go to get a reading, and it's kind of like, no. It's kind of like, well, okay, I'll consider that. But do I ultimately move with that decision? I don't know. It depends. But it's another opinion I can consider.
Yeah.
But if people are unable to articulate that, as some people just can't, they don't know really why they're there because they're so stressed or upset, right? We don't always know. But me telling you what's going on in your seventh house, it just has a way of happening too, especially if I'm just like being glib and like, oh, it could
Yes.
mean you're divorced. It could mean you separate Mars. It's a separation thing. Oh, it's in Cancer. It's going to be really like, emotional, and there's going to be everyone's going to be holding to to their side of the story and their tribe in this argument and stuff. And it's like, I could have just entirely created that scenario out of that was never going to happen just by saying it could be this, or this. It has a way of
Yep.
doing things, and I'm really sad about how I see most astrologers approach that.
Well, I'm just really glad you're doing this work, and I hope people hear the message, and I hope more people do the work to be more thoughtful, because when we see clients, we just have to assume that they're in a very vulnerable situation, and we should really treat them with that and be thoughtful about, like, if they seem like they need more help than you can give them, stop thinking about whatever, money that you're going to be getting out of this, and just really give them the right advice, which is go somewhere else, seek some other advice. Do you have a therapist? Do you have other people you talk to about this,
Yeah, I mean, yeah, refer out. Psychology Today is a great place to send people to find a therapist. If you there's all kinds of low income things in every city. There's all kinds of ways to find stuff. And for those who are looking to get some training, you can go to mentalhealthfirstaid.org, and it's just like a day or two long class you can get to get a certification just to have something.
I'm
You
gonna
don't got
do
to go to
it.
college for it, but it gives you a lot. You're a lot more prepared to deal with the difficult stuff that comes your way and what is appropriate to say, what isn't. It's just a great little certification to get for anybody who interacts with people.
I'm gonna do it. Thank you. And
Yeah.
whoever's listening, if you're an astrologer, you should do it too, at the very least.
At the very least, yeah. I mean, it's really important
Yeah.
to get it right, because if you get it wrong, I hope you have liability insurance for your astrology practice. To give people some more resources, there's a woman named Frida Illahi. I'm not sure how to say her name. Illahi, Frida Illahi. I think she's Australian, and she's doing some really interesting work bridging astrology with positive psychology, which, as I see it, is kind of the alpine cure to transpersonal psychology. And it's not a school of astrology itself, it's just kind of like an add-on, a modifier to other psychologies. But she did a talk with Isar recently about planetary stuff and positive psychology, and she's really doing some meaningful work trying to counsel people in this way and give people resources. So I would direct people to her and that Isar conference from April 6th. It's called Cosmic Reflections: Bridging Planetary Energies and Positive Psychology. That's a great resource for people who want to kind of like, well, okay, I realize this, I hear what you're saying, but like, what do I do about it? Well, positive psychology is a great place to go. There's a book called The Happiness Hypothesis, and and the mental health first aid should be a great thing. That should get people, thinking and hopefully getting some skills and to deepen your practice and deepen your work to be a, better provider.
Yes, I love it. Thank you for all of that. That was super fascinating and very important. And I hope that people, especially astrologers, look into the mentalhealthfirstaid.org. All these things will be linked below. Now, why don't you talk about your practice while I pull up the Wheel of Fate?
Yeah, I do astrology with no bullshit. So if you, want, someone who's studying clinical psychology to kind of look at things and, not make things worse for you, I can at least promise that. But yeah, I, primarily traditional Hellenistic to medieval Arabic is kind of my area, but I come from modern astrology first, and that's where I got my start. And then I slowly began to chip away the paint. And yeah, I do tarot as well. So I kind of I'm interested in those how those things overlap as well. But yeah, I just do ye olde astrology reading, ye olde tarot reading. Come and get it.
Awesome. Yay. All right. Well, are we ready to play?
I'm ready, William.
We are going to play the Wheel of Fate. Can you see the screen?
I can.
All right. This goofy ass wheel. All right. Here we go. Oh. Ooh.
Oh no.
Jupiter. All
Not Jupiter.
right, so we've got Jupiter in Jupiter in Scorpio.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think of, hidden figures. I watched that movie the other night, Hidden Figures. People are
Oh,
really
yeah.
kind of trying to really lift this space program off the ground and expand NASA. But there are these kind of obscured, obscured fi figures toiling in the shadows and in the background, kind of just plugging away at this work while, we didn't know they even existed. So I think that I just thought of that movie for some reason.
That makes a lot of sense. I like that a lot.
Yeah, I think of the Crusades. It's being this kind of like thing creeping in the shadows, this threat at any given time you could be totally plundered, I think of the film. I think of existential crises a little bit, like this Bergman film Winter Light about a priest who r loses his religion and kind of just fights with God quietly in the empty church.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah,
Or
that was a
like
pretty.
those like re what religion is that where there's like torture involved, where they like where they'll like give themselves lashings. I can't remember which.
Yeah, it's like, is it Pentecostal?
I think it's Pentecostal, yeah. Actually, it's the Roman Catholics. It's like that kind of like pain in the name of God kind of.
I think that's a great pain in the name of God. It's a great
Yeah.
Jupiter, Scorpio. You win the Wheel of Fate.
Oh, we've never had a winner before. With
Oh, okay.
the
We're all winners.
Wheel of Fate, we're all winners.
It's like really going all in on like magic when you're like, ah, we'll see where this goes.
Yeah,
Well, I don't know what's going
yeah.
to happen. I'm just
Or
going to try
like,
this and see what happens. Abyss, I think, is a good word for Jupiter in Scorpio.
it's a really good one. Abyss. There have been so many death charts with like Jupiter involved that it also makes me think of like a mass suicide or like a.
The Menendez brothers, Jupiter is a trigger of a lot of the horrors of their case, especially when I think Austin Coppock did a
Yes.
talk about this, where it's like
Oh, we were at that
the yeah okay we
format
were
a few
there,
years ago. Yeah.
like the lot of the father is ruled by Jupiter, and all the Time Lord things and Jupiter things were just triggering all the bloodshed and horror. So that's, any
Yeah.
planet can be a trigger in that way.
Right. Jupiter, one of the things with it being about expansion is it can just be a lot. It can be extra. People can be over the top with whatever.
Yeah, there's like a over the top, like over the top occultism. I think Golden Dawn comes to mind.
Oh, yeah.
Thelema. If you've ever been to a Gnostic mass,
No, I have
it's worth
not.
going. There's probably, I think
No.
there's probably one in Portland, but there's definitely one in Seattle. Joe and I tried to go to the one in Seattle, and they were closed in the night that they had the event.
Oh,
We
no.
tried, but yeah, I think that, magnanimous occultists. There's a few at Norwalk I can who come to mind who feel very Jupiter in Scorpio to me.
I mean, to bring it full circle, Twin Peaks, the whole thing is, it's a massive kind of Jupiter Scorpio thing. I know that's not the in the chart of the show, but
Yeah,
it's.
it is like a bottleneck of sorts, right? Like something so big has to fit in something so small. It's like Cooper kind of going between worlds is a very Jupiter and Scorpio kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Plumbing the depths, right, of the mystical experience.
Totally. Great. I think that we covered that.
Yes, we did.
Well, thank you so much for being here, Travis. This was so much fun, and I want to have you on again to talk about other things. And we're definitely going to try and get Sherilyn Fenn on here. That's going to be a mission.
Yeah, there are other people too.
Okay.
Let's talk. Let's
Yeah,
talk.
let's talk about
My
it.
people will talk to your people.
Yeah, exactly.